Bye.
Okay. Hello, everybody. And welcome to Ghoul Society.
That's my big sister, Jamie.
And that's my little sister, Sarah. And we're a little bit sleepy this morning, I think.
Yeah, I'm still getting over a cold. And also, we haven't recorded in like four weeks.
Yeah, that's true. We are grateful to be recording on the unceded stolen territories of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations and the Lekwungen and Wissahinich peoples whose historical relations with the land continue to this day. As uninvited guests on this land, we are committed to disrupting racism and colonial violence within ourselves, our families, and our communities. By listening to this podcast, you've officially been inducted into the Ghoul Society.
Sorry, my glasses are really uncomfortable.
Okay, Sarah's taking... Oh, she's just fixing. She's trying to figure it out.
I can't take them off because then I won't be able to read.
Yeah, that's so
and fair. That's what happens when you're nearsighted but you wear your glasses all the time.
Shit.
And now you need them to read.
Yeah, this is why I think glasses are kind of a scam.
Like, completely fucked me up.
Right? Okay.
Like, I can't even go on my phone without it being blurry.
Oh no.
I'm not very nearsighted at all.
Ugh. Yeah.
I just can't see.
This is more strongly making the case for me not really wearing my glasses. I haven't been wearing them at all because they've been making tism. Me so...
Oh, that's what we call the astigmatism.
That's...
Not the other tism.
I was so confused. I was like, how is that going to help my... Okay, so anyways, yeah, I don't know, because mine give me a weird migraine situation. Sarah just dropped her phone on top of her computer. She's in a precarious position today. She's trying her best, though. Oh my goodness. I think I just need to go to the eye doctor. Bibs, I don't think that's going to stay up.
My phone is already tilting. So hot.
It's tilting. Goodness. I had a really fun week.
That's great. What did you... Yeah. What did you, something...
Just at work. Oh. It was really good. Yeah, it was a really nice time. Nothing really happened specifically, but I got to share something really cool at my work.
Nice.
So that was really awesome, and it felt really good. And I was really nervous, but then it went really well. And we are outside on one of the days.
Outside? Girl, it's been chilly.
It was kind of chilly. And of course, it started raining like right when we went outside. And I was like, suck it up. Is that the day when it was
pouring?
No. So, I was working on knitting a sweater. And I got like... just past the bust area, and then I decided it was too big and not a good density, and so I frogged it, and I'm restarting. And that's my life update.
Frog.
Yep, rip it.
That's sad.
Yeah, it's okay. It's growth.
Oh, I almost called SOS.
Sarah's having some... challenges here.
Yeah.
It's because the base is too narrow.
I know. I gotta make it bigger.
Sarah's distracted by her technology. Instead of doing her job of recording with me, she's being distracted. Sarah's being an influencer.
Yeah, well, the people online don't even like me, so...
Fuck.
They keep being mean.
No. Sarah's being bullied online. Maybe yeah. You just shouldn't even do it.
Someone was like, I like post a video and they're like, I've been following you, but, and the, what's the word? They're like, I've been following you, and the expectation is that you follow people back when you're a small creator, so I unfollowed you. Okay. I was like, I didn't even see that you followed me, sorry.
Yeah.
And also, like,
people are so fucking
their
petty.
Videos weren't, like, actual videos. So it's like, why am I gonna follow you?
Oh my god. The expectation is that you don't. You know what? Fuck you.
And I was That's like, what I'm gonna,
fuck you, fuck off. I don't care for any of that shit.
Yeah,
like, ignore them. Fuck the haters.
Listen, I'll follow you back if your content is interesting.
Got him.
If you're just like posting these weird like AI,
yeah,
nothing.
Ew.
I don't even know. It was just like. Not videos, anyway. Okay, well, it's like, whatever. You're not even a creator. You're not even doing anything. So I'm not going to follow you.
It's okay.
You.
Don't take that shit personally. That shit's stupid.
It's funny. Yeah. And then someone else commented on one of my videos and was like, hello, and then had the blind emoji. And I was like, hi, I see your comment.
Cool. Thanks. Okay.
It's like, I was sleeping. That's why I didn't reply to your comment right away.
What? Okay. People are crazy.
Yeah, so that, I don't know.
You could just turn off all comments on everything.
But then I can't engage with anyone and then my videos won't be promoted.
Oh god, that's crazy. Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
That's how it works.
I see.
Also, TikTok like shadow banned me, so what's even the fucking point?
Yeah.
My last three videos have gotten like 50 views.
Oof.
Because I didn't post for like 5 days.
What?
So the algorithm like fucked me over.
Dude, that is actually crazy.
I know.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, like, well, if you're not posting consistently all the time, too bad.
Damn. I don't know how anyone makes it these days. Anymore.
I don't know.
Anyway, we're not here for influencing bullshit. We're here for ghost stories. Or true crime.
It's not a ghost story.
Okay.
It's actually really sad.
Oh.
So buckle the fuck up.
Buckle up. Hold your butts.
Hold on your
butts. As our
butts.
Gals over at Morbid say.
Yeah, hold on your butts. And I heard about this story through the Indigenous course that I took online.
Okay.
And I was like, whoa, what's this about? And so I thought that it would be good to tell this person's story because it actually really is influential for our country as it is now, and also racism and sexism and femicide.
Damn.
So, on the night of April 17th, 1995, in Regina, Saskatchewan, on the traditional territories of the Blackfoot, Métis, and Sioux nations, 28-year-old Pamela Jean George lost her life in a brutal act of violence and was left in a ditch as if she were a piece of garbage. Pamela was a single mother of two, trying to give her children the best life that she could. She was a Sato woman from the Sikkimé Reserve, north of Regina, Indigenous Reserve. She was the eldest of six and came from what people would call a broken home, so her parents weren't together.
Mm.
It's said that Pamela left school in grade 9 and moved to Regina, where she lived with economic insecurity, and she really just left looking for a good life. She was actually a single mother of three, though she lost her son in a drowning accident in 1989.
Hmm.
So she was a mother of two little girls.
Hmm.
And Pamela worked as a sex worker twice a month to support her children on top of the other work she did. I think she worked like as a cleaner.
Wow. That is a fucking hustle.
Yeah. Her father, Terry Sangways, said, quote, Pam very much loved her family and her children, and she was always there for them, end quote.
Mm.
On the night of her murder, Pamela was working in downtown Regina as a sex worker, which, again, she did about twice a month, and she was approached by 20-year-old Stephen Comerfield, She got into his car and he drove them out of town towards the airport. Once they arrived on a desolate road, Cumberfield walked to the back of the car and opened the trunk where his friend, 19-year-old Alex Turnowetsky, was hiding.
Oh.
It was later revealed that Turnowetsky had hidden in the trunk because they were unsuccessful in picking up other sex workers.
With two men. Of course.
So, of course, women were spooked because they were like, okay, they're like the chance of violence is
higher
with two men. And both college students are said to have been drinking throughout the night, and they were very intoxicated. They apparently shared a 40-ounce bottle of liquor and then a 12-pack of beer.
Holy fuck. And they're driving around.
Yes.
Casually driving.
While they debated what they wanted to do that night. I'm not clear on what made them want to pick up a sex worker, and it doesn't really matter because that's a job that some people have. Mm-hmm. But I fear that they may have had a violent motive before they even picked up Pamela.
Right.
According to later testimony by the two college students, when Turnowetsky was let out of the trunk, Pamela began to scream and she tried to run away. Fuck. They unfortunately caught her and forced her to perform oral sex on them and then beat her to death when they were done with her.
Oh, that's so fucked up.
I know.
That's disgusting.
During the trial, Dr. Modesto Esclenar, who testified on behalf of the Crown, I think he was the coroner or the mortician, someone, I don't know, doctor, who knows. he described Pamela's injuries as being consistent of that with a blunt object. She had a broken nose, swollen eyes and hands, cuts on her face and lips, and bruises that covered her whole body. Mm. When Cumberfield and Turnowetsky were finished beating Pamela George to death, they left her in a ditch on the side of the road. They claim later on that they didn't know that they had killed her, but Pamela died from cerebral hemorrhage, or a swelling of the brain.
Right. And also, trauma. Like, fuck you, anyway. Like, oh, yeah, didn't know we killed her. Okay, well, you beat the you raped her, or sexually assaulted her.
Yeah.
And then you beat the shit out of her.
Yeah.
And, like, that's enough.
Yeah.
The fact that you're like, oh, we didn't know we killed her. Fuck you.
And then also later on, they literally will say something different.
That's crazy.
Later, when Pamela's family was finally able to hold a funeral for her, they couldn't have an open coffin because she was beaten so badly. Mm. So that's kind of like who Pamela George was, the awful thing that happened to her. And so this trial was like a big shock to people because they were like, these two white college boys, they couldn't do that.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Stephen Cumberfield and Alexander Turnowetsky were from middle class families. And many in the community couldn't believe that they could have committed such a horrific crime. Cumberfield was the son of a former New Democratic Party cabinet minister. Oh. And was like the star of his college basketball team.
It's always middle class men.
I know.
Like, I feel like it's actually so rarely the men that are in poverty.
I know.
It's almost always, and people with like power. Yeah. Like police officers or politicians or the son of politicians.
Yeah. I know.
It's crazy.
Turnowetsky's father was a previous professor of social work at the University of Regina.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. Later on during the trial, friends of the two men testified that they bragged about what they did to Pamela on the night of her murder.
Ew.
One friend, Tyler Stewart, recalled a phone call on the morning of April 18th, 95, during which he asked Cumberfield what he was up to the previous night. You know, it's like, what up, bro? What'd you do last night? His reply, quote, not much. We drove around, got drunk, and killed this chick, end quote.
That's fucked up.
I know.
Okay.
Stewart additionally testified that Cumberfield told him that they had threatened to kill Pamela if she didn't perform sexual acts on them. Mm. And according to Stewart, he also spoke with Turnowetsky, who said, quote, she deserved it. She was a quote-unquote Indian.
End quote. So disgusting.
In court, Czernowetzki would claim that he was too drunk to remember what had happened the night of Pamela's murder, but he clearly remembered beating her so badly that they must have known that she was dead.
Yeah.
There's no way.
And they also bragged about killing her.
Yeah. So. Also, shout out to this guy, freaking Tyler Stewart. Just like, yeah, they fucking told me this.
Yeah.
The trial for the murder of Pamela George began in December of 1996. It became the trial of the year in Regina and would spread across the country for the brutality, convictions, and comments made by the judge, Ted Malone. I'm not entirely sure how Comerfield and Czernowetzki were arrested. Within all of the archive news articles that I read, none of them mentioned a long-term chase or investigation. So my theory is that Tyler Stewart said something to the police or another person. Like, they probably talked to other friends and they were and their friends probably called the police. No matter how it happened, it thankfully happened quickly in terms of a murder investigation, which often, especially with Indigenous people, are swept under the rug. And so the two men were officially charged with first-degree murder, sexual assault, and forcible confinement. A total of 30 witnesses took the stand during the trial.
Whoa.
That spoke to, guess what, an all-white jury.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know.
Like, witnesses that were against the crime, like, speaking against the crime or in defending it?
In all. Okay. Just 30 people.
Okay.
30 people testified in total, including...
Testified that it happened. Or you don't know.
Like, so the two accused testified, the coroner testified.
Oh, I see.
Professionals testified.
Got it.
They're just all called witnesses.
Okay.
Are they not?
I don't know.
Oh, I think they're just all called witnesses.
Okay.
Once the testimony had ended, Judge Malone would spark outrage in Pamela's family, the Indigenous community, and across the country as he instructed the jury to remember that Pamela was, quote, indeed a prostitute, end quote, when considering the sexual assault charge.
Okay, you can still be sexually assaulted if you are a sex worker.
Yeah.
Like, it's like when people are like, oh, well, like, you can't be raped by your husband or your wife. It's like, yeah, you actually can.
Yeah.
Like, no means no. It's not that complicated.
Yeah.
The only true consent is active consent.
Yeah. And this is something that we see time and time again within the justice system. As you said, and it's a major reason why sex workers don't seek help when they're sexually assaulted because they're not believed or, you know, like there's only probably like a handful, unfortunately, that do see justice.
Yeah.
This sentence would be the first outrageous thing that Judge Malone said on the stand when he also warned the jury that it would be, quote, very dangerous, end quote, to convict the men of first degree murder.
Dangerous? Why?
I don't know. Because they're daddies.
Okay.
Or, like, because they're white. Yeah. Like, white 18-year-olds.
And tied up in, like, politics and
stuff.
That's crazy.
And they have a future.
Fuck them. Fuck them. They took away... Sorry, what was her name?
Pamela.
Pamela.
Yeah.
They took away Pamela's future and livelihood.
Yeah.
So, like, fuck you.
And her kids lost their mom. And her parents... Lost her a daughter. Kid.
Yeah.
And she had five siblings.
Yeah.
Like,
and she probably had a ton of friends and a whole community.
Yeah, exactly.
And the judge is worried about these boys' future.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's my assumption.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's probably what he means because that's usually what they mean.
Yeah.
And so these comments alone led the National Action Committee on the Status of Women to file a complaint against the Canadian Judicial Council.
Wow.
And said that the remarks, quote, dehumanize women and trivialize the murder, end quote.
Nice.
But I don't think nothing happened with that.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
This case was not the only one that Ted Malone presided over that infuriated people, and I hate him. He had complaints filed against him before, and people had asked him to be removed as a judge before.
Whoa.
Back in 94, Malone dismissed charges of unlawful confinement and sexual assault against a pimp, quote unquote, who was accused of attacking an 18-year-old woman in his apartment. I think she was a traffic sex worker.
Right.
Malone is quoted as saying, quote, "She admitted at the time of the offense she was a prostitute and did so until her pimp at the time beat her up. It would be unsafe to convict him," end quote. I don't know if that just means that he's going to, sex traffic these, other people out. I don't know what he means by it's unsafe to convict these people.
Like, if he convicts the pimp, is there a chance of then the pimp, trying to kill the women who are...
Yeah.
Standing up against him, or...
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. But this Ted guy doesn't seem like he's trying to stand up for fucking women, care. So...
Or non-white people.
Yeah. Yeah.
People of color. He just doesn't care. He's the worst.
Right.
Throughout the trial, guess what the defense's argument was?
I don't even fucking want to hear it, probably.
They said that it was alcohol and not racism that drove Comerfield and Chernowetsky to dehumanize and murder Pamela.
Okay. Okay.
It was said that their blood alcohol level was 0.31.
Whoa.
Which is 4 times the legal driving limit.
Yeah. And they're also, again, driving around.
Yeah. Downtown Regina. That's crazy. Thankfully, the Crown countered that despite the intoxication, the two men could still understand intent and consequences of actions.
Yeah.
Meaning that they would still know the difference between right and wrong.
Yeah.
They had the wherewithal to threaten Pamela and beat her. And brag about it.
Yeah.
So you can't then say, oh, I was drunk, I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Because you do know, because you fucking bragged about it to Tyler Stewart.
Yeah, exactly.
So that makes no sense.
Yeah.
In the end, it took the jury a total of 12 hours over 2 days of deliberation to return with a verdict of manslaughter.
Okay.
Not even murder.
Okay. Well, okay. That's shitty, but at least they were still found guilty of something.
Yes.
Because there are so many cases where they're not found guilty at all.
Or they just get probation or...
Yeah.
But don't be happy yet.
Okay.
On January 30th, 1997, Judge Malone sentenced Comerfield and Chernowetsky to 6.5 years in prison.
Okay.
Each.
Okay.
And the frustration didn't end there. After the case was finished, there was a lot of questioning as to why the prosecution didn't bring up the new sentencing provisions under Section 718.2 under the Criminal Code, which allowed judges to increase sentences for hate crimes or crimes motivated by prejudice or racism.
Interesting.
If these provisions, which were instated in September of 96, so
they should before, have been,
were taken into account, Pamela's murder could have and should have been labeled during the trial as a hate crime.
Yep.
And the charges could have been more substantial.
Right. But it wasn't.
It wasn't brought up.
Okay.
At all.
Okay.
Which is just
even though they made those fucked up disparaging comments.
Yeah. About her being crazy. A sex worker.
Yeah. Well, and...
And she was indigenous.
Yeah. I mean, the comments that the killers made about how, she deserved it. It's that is literal racism and hate.
Yeah.
Just disgusting.
That's literally a hate crime.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so that's...
The justice system failing. That's not new here on this here podcast.
Or in our country.
Nope.
The reaction to the sentencing was immediate and furious. Relatives of Pamela burst into tears when the verdict was announced in the courtroom, and Comerfield and Chernowetsky were kind of emotionless as the verdict was read. Blaine Favell, then chief of the Federation of Saskatchewan Indigenous Nations, called it, quote, "one of the most unjust sentences in Saskatchewan judicial history," end quote.
Whoa.
He wrote to the acting attorney general to consider appealing the case and argued that justice must, quote, be seen to be done, end quote. The response? The Attorney General stated that the courts had reviewed the judge's charge and found no issue.
That's crazy. He went out of his way to be like, hey, no. And then they were still like, sorry, our hands are tied. It's fine.
Yeah.
Probably because everyone involved is white and uneducated.
Yeah. And like on paper, it was like, this is how they were convicted. So this is the sentencing, you know, it was just very like, kind of like to the book. But at the same time, it's like there's extenuating circumstances.
It didn't like factor everything in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chief Favell would also be quoted in a 1997 article as saying, quote, there have been over 20 major injustice studies over the past 15 years, which have all come to the same conclusion. First Nations people experience racism and systematic discrimination in the criminal justice system, both as accused and victim. Mm-hmm. In the Pamela George case, we have seen little respect for Aboriginal persons. First Nations will not have respect for the justice system until it is changed.
Yep. Snaps to that.
Yeah, snaps. Many Indigenous leaders saw the manslaughter verdict as confirmation that nations had long known. There are two justice systems in Canada, one for white people and one for Indigenous people. One council representative from the Yorkton Tribal Council wrote to the Minister of Justice, quote, if you deny that there is a justice system of whites and one for the Indigenous nations people, we want answers. It is within your jurisdiction to bring this concern forward. Too many of our First Nations women have met similar violent-related deaths. Now, more so, as a result of this case, we fear this might bring about an open season on our women, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
Chief Lindsay Kay of the Sikkimi Indigenous Band furthered this notion and is quoted as saying, quote, all this goes to prove to me that there are two justice systems, one for the white people and one for the Indigenous people. It's all right for a white person to kill an Indigenous person. Nobody cares if an Indigenous person dies, end quote. Vigils were held for the injustice of Pamela George's death throughout the country from Saskatoon to Halifax all the way to Vancouver in protest.
Wow.
It completely, like, took over the news.
Wow. That's amazing.
A criminologist who worked at the University of Regina, Barry Anderson, said that the case was of public interest because it showed the, quote, two cultural solitudes of Saskatchewan, end quote, during this time in Regina. And Saskatchewan as a province, because I recently started reading the Starlight Tours.
Yeah.
One of the most intense books that I've read.
Yeah.
And like I was reading it last night and I was getting so mad.
Yeah.
It was very hard to like contain my emotions
mm-hmm.
when I'm reading that book. But that also took place like a lot in Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, and that like happened, like the Starlight Tours happened a lot during this time and kind of the, like throughout the 90s, even into the 2000s as well.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what- I think
it still happens too.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
If you don't know what Starlight Tours are, it's when police pick up typically an Indigenous man, and then they drive them out to a rural area and just kick them out of the car and make them walk back to civilization
mm-hmm.
or to the city, wherever they're going.
And oftentimes it happens in the middle of winter.
In minus 25.
Yeah, minus 30, minus 40, when it's like impossible to survive in the conditions. And mm-hmm. oftentimes too, the people who they're picking up are usually typically under the influence, not always,
mm-hmm.
but typically as well. So mm-hmm. then chances of survival are even lower.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a disgusting practice that cops have been doing for decades.
Yeah. And like all of the Indigenous men in the book Starlight Tours that this happened to, there's one so far where I'm at that survived.
Wow.
Thankfully. Holy but shit. They're dropped off. They don't have shoes. They're in like maybe a jean jacket, you know, and a white t-shirt, and they just freeze to death.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like a lot like that injustice was extremely popular in the like 90s, well earlier, but like throughout history really. But and then this is also happening
right
in like the same province. So it's just like, I don't know what's happening over there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's across the entire country.
Yeah.
And like across, and it also lines up with like here in BC as a province, like we are often talking about missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Mm-hmm. And so there's that like larger campaign and the Red Dress campaign as well, which lines up with all of that too.
Yeah.
Of just, one of the books I read over the summer, The Highway of Tears.
Yeah.
Did you read that one too?
Yeah.
That one was also like so
very intense.
And just, it got into like the nitty gritty of what was happening and followed the stories of these women who went missing along Highway 16, also known as the Highway of Tears, and just how disproportionately Indigenous women and girls are affected by being picked up and being killed or being taken or sex trafficked or you name it, essentially like violent crimes against them versus other women.
Yeah, I have some statistics for Indigenous women, like specifically murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls that I kind of touch on at the end. But yeah, as like also just once you like start really learning about Indigenous injustice in our country and you kind of go down that spiral, it never ends.
Yep.
And it's really difficult to like learn about it in a way.
Yep. It is difficult, but it is necessary. Also extremely necessary. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's also that like place of privilege to be like, this is a difficult thing to learn about because it's like, but it's even more difficult to be in it.
Yeah.
You know, and so trying to be like, yeah, it's difficult, but it's a necessary, like a necessity.
I think that
everyone should know.
Everyone should read The Highway of Tears. Everyone should read The Starlight Tours. Everyone should know this story of Pamela George and her life and the injustice that her family saw.
Yeah.
When these two fucking white kids were just like, oh, sorry.
We were drunk.
We were drunk.
It's so fucked up.
Yeah. Barry Anderson, the criminologist, also noted that the men, Comerfield and Turnowetsky, were looking to pick up an Indigenous sex, or he thought that they were looking to pick up an Indigenous sex worker specifically, because if they wanted a white woman, they would have gone to another area of downtown
where
the white women worked. So at that time, I'm not sure how it is now, but at that time in the late 90s,
it was segregated.
It was I don't think purposefully, maybe there was some racism going on there, but
yes, there was.
Yeah.
There definitely was.
So white women typically worked one area or like street of Regina, and then Indigenous women were typically on a different one.
Right.
So I don't know if they had like tried to pick up a white woman and then they were being turned away because there was two of them. Yeah, unfortunately.
I guess we will never know.
Never know. I mean, I don't really want to know, but they're still alive, these men.
Of course.
But on his last day of testimony, Comerfield noted on the stand, quote, "I just apologize for whatever part we played in this. I don't know what happened, if we were the ones who did it or not," end quote.
Wait, sorry, that was one of the guys?
Yeah, Stephen Comerfield said that.
Okay.
On his last day of testimony.
Dipshit.
I know.
"I apologize for whatever happened. I don't know if we did it or if someone..." You did it. You literally did it. You're literally lying on the fucking stand.
Literally bragged about it.
And that's not a fucking apology.
No.
That is not an apology. Oh, I'm sorry for whatever we maybe did. Okay. Obviously, you're not reflecting or, like, owning up to what you did at all.
Yeah, and also, 100%, that was scripted from his lawyer.
Right.
Not, like, an actual... His lawyer's like, you gotta say this on the stand, dude.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
And, like, no hate to defense lawyers. They gotta do their job, but that was...
I guess. Sometimes I'm like, actually, fuck you. Like... Be a better human.
Yeah. Chernowetsky added to this by saying, quote, I just apologized to the George family for the way I treated Pamela. She didn't deserve it, and there's no excuse for what I did. I'm just sorry, end quote.
Okay.
At least his was
better.
Kind of.
Yeah.
On the way to prison, Chernowetsky is also quoted as saying, quote, the jury made a fair decision, but most importantly, I'd like to reiterate my apology to the George family. I didn't mean for anything to happen, and I'm sorry it did, end quote. Yet he literally told a friend she deserved it because she was Indigenous, so fuck off.
Yeah.
And the defense claimed that...
people have the ability to change and, like, unlearn their racism. He was, like, actually unlearning it in that moment, or if he just, like, felt guilty and wanted to, like, get rid of his guilty feeling.
Yeah.
And, like, who knows?
Yeah. I don't agree that the jury was fair. No. The jury was made up of white people. And I think there was probably, like, 3 women on this jury. So it's like...
Right.
That's not a jury of your peers.
No.
I mean, wait. No, it is because it's white men.
Yeah, that's true. But it's not a jury of
Pamela's peers.
Yeah. So...
But, yeah. Such empty words for a brutal murder of a single mother.
Yeah.
Just trying to live her life.
Totally. And care for her children and
be the best that she could be.
Yeah.
In March of 1997, an appeal was launched with the basis that the defense argued that the two men shouldn't be allowed parole once they had served 1/3 of their sentences, which continues to be part of the eligibility of parole in Canada, which I didn't know.
Huh.
You only have to serve 1/3 of your sentence to be able to apply for parole.
So because their sentence was 6 years, they would only have to serve 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this appeal went nowhere. The courts were like, nah. In 1998, the conviction was once again brought to the Court of Appeals because the prosecution viewed Judge Malone's instructions to the jury as instruction to acquit.
Hmm.
Because he was like, it'd be dangerous to convict them of murder.
Oh, right. But I still don't understand what that means.
I don't know. The Court of Appeal held that the instruction was proper and that the Crown should have made its objection at the time in court.
Yeah.
Which, that's kind of valid. But anyway, the sentencing wasn't reviewed. So people were just like, the prosecution was just like, hey, can we just, like, take away their eligibility of parole in 2 years? And they were like, no.
Wow.
And then they're like, okay, but what about this? And the courts were like, no.
Okay.
Like, okay. In the end, Stephen Comerfield served less than 4 years and was granted early parole when in May of 2000, he received day parole. And so he was living in a halfway house in Vancouver. He was then granted full parole in December of 2000 as the board didn't see him as a quote unquote undue risk to society. According to multiple articles, Comerfield is said to have participated in violent offenders programs while in prison. So that's, good. You know, rehabilitation.
Yes.
Including spousal assault programs and substance abuse programs.
Good.
He also reportedly took university courses while in prison and acted as a tutor for other inmates. He now lives in Mexico City. And has changed his name.
Yep, makes sense.
And is a poet.
Okay.
And a further twist in this case, a colleague of his, Elliot Clark, was meant to give a lecture to the University of Regina a few years ago, or maybe longer, I forgot the date on that, and had to pull out due to backlash from saying that he might read a poem by Comerfield.
Hmm, interesting.
And so people were like, you're not going to read a poem by a fucking murderer.
Yeah.
In the city
yeah.
where he murdered this indigenous woman, Pamela. Yeah. You're not doing that.
No.
So Elliot Clark was going to be part of a lecture on murdered and missing indigenous women.
What? Okay.
When it was found out that he was friends with Comerfield and Elliot had learned of the murder only months before he was due at the university.
I see. Okay.
So it was like new to him. He didn't actually know about
it. Okay.
Yeah. Long story short, Clark didn't participate and apologized to the indigenous community and Pamela's family.
Good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not really like his fault if he actually didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like he was like, oh, fuck, now I'm in this situation.
Yeah.
And then he did the right thing. So I'm kind of like, okay, whatever.
But he said he wanted to use, like, but even once he found out, he was like, oh, I want to use Comerfield's work to discuss the role of poets within social issues. Like, he was going to use it as, like, an example.
Interesting. I don't know how I yeah. feel about that. Not great.
Yeah.
Not awesome.
So that was like when I was researching this, that kept popping. I was like, Pamela George life, Pamela George like
right.
family, and it was like Elliot Clark, and I was like, okay, I don't fucking care.
Yeah, because it's a big, more recent part yeah. of the story.
So that's Comerfield. Guess he's doing good.
Okay.
Yeah. Alexander Czernowiecki was granted day parole in August of 2000, and he was out of prison for about a year, when in 2001 he faced charges of assault, robbery, and drunk driving.
Okay, so sounds like he actually didn't learn anything at all.
He didn't learn anything, and
the other guy at least sounds like maybe he tried his best.
He perhaps was rehabilitated.
Yes.
Yeah, apparently, I went on to Reddit, and apparently Czernowiecki lives on Vancouver Island.
Awesome.
And he's been in and out of the Victoria court system.
Okay.
So that's all I know about him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Should we release this podcast episode?
It's fine.
Okay.
Hey, it's public news.
True. Yeah.
Public info.
Yep. We're just sharing the shit that's already out there, so don't come for us.
Yeah, thanks.
And listen.
Look.
The things that we say are just our opinions, okay?
Yeah.
So, I mean, whenever I say, fuck you, that's just my opinion.
It's just my opinion. It's just my opinion. Free speech, so.
And hashtag free speech.
Yeah.
So don't come for us.
The murder of Pamela George was not an isolated incident like we discussed earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It was a symptom of deeper ongoing injustices in Canada, such as lenient sentences, the dismissal of racial motivation, the public view of Indigenous women, and the public view of sex workers.
Mm-hmm.
Pamela's story continues to shape conversations about racism, sexism, colonial violence, and the treatment of Indigenous women in Canada. According to the Assembly of First Nations and the National Inquiry to Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls, Indigenous women are 4 times more likely to be victims of violence. They make up 16% of homicide victims and 11% of missing women, but only make up 4.3% of the country's population.
That's so fucked up.
Indigenous women are 2 times more likely to experience domestic violence from a partner, and more than 13% of Indigenous people experience violence from an ex or a current partner. 5.7% versus 5.7% for non-Indigenous people.
Mm.
But that includes people of color and white people, I believe.
Yeah.
Indigenous women are more likely to experience physical and sexual assault, with 56% having experienced physical assault and 46% having experienced sexual assault, compared to 1/3 of non-Indigenous women. From 2001 to 2014 alone, average homicide rates involving an indigenous victim were 4 times higher than non-Indigenous victims within a 13-year span.
That's so gross.
This was even higher in the territories of our country.
Right.
In 2016, the National Inquiry to Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls was established to, quote, make recommendations to eliminate systemic causes of violence and to assure the safety of Indigenous women and girls in Canada, end quote. The final report of the inquiry shows that ongoing and purposeful violations against human and Indigenous rights are the cause behind the statistics noted earlier. This report consists of 231 calls for justice directed towards governing bodies, institutions, and the public. The report is made up of more than 2,380 Indigenous family members, survivors, knowledge keepers, and experts. And you're able to read the report called Reclaiming Power and Place, the final report of the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls on the National Inquiry's website, which I will link, it in the show notes. It's a PDF. There's like two parts to it. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was in my, I took a gendered studies course, and it was on humanitarian stuff and human rights. It was on like human rights and stuff. And we read part of the report, Reclaiming Power and Place. I also had to read part of it for my Indigenous studies course that I had also took in university.
Yeah.
But I think that everyone should at least read like the introduction of it. Mm-hmm. It's a really important
document.
Piece. Yeah, it's a really important document. And it also just, yeah, I think everyone should have to read a part of it. I think that it should be taught in schools.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that's definitely the murder of Pamela Jean George.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that story and also doing it justice.
Thanks.
This is just a reminder to everybody to be a good human.
Mm-hmm.
Make yourself informed. Make yourself educated. Learn about Indigenous resistance, resilience, brilliance, and also all the shit that they have put up with over the past few hundred years.
Mm-hmm.
It is your responsibility to do so in this life.
Mm-hmm.
As well, if you are experiencing any sexualized violence, if you need to talk to someone, get support, or figure out what resources are available to you, you can call 1-888-933-9007, and that's the Sexual Violence Helpline, or you can go to sexualviolencehelpline.ca if you are in need of any help. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Now go hug your friends and your family.
Yeah, and take care of each other, and
be kind.
Be kind, and maybe watch some Bob's Burgers to, you know,
watch some Bob Burgers. Go start Campaign for Critical Role if you haven't done so already. So you should go watch that. Also, The Mighty Nein is airing soon. That's also by Critical Role. They actually released the first episode on YouTube a week early.
I'm so excited for you. And go touch grass.
Go touch
go outside, grass. Take a walk. Do some reflection. And
thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah. If you have questions, comments, concerns, critiques, you can email us at
ghoulsocietypod@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Instagram at
ghoulsocietypod.
You can follow Sarah on TikTok. Leave her a nice comment because people are assholes at
ghoul.societypod.
And you can also find all of our episodes and some shorts on YouTube.
Yeah.
What is that? Just Ghoul Society Pod?
Yeah.
And you can find each episode's description, trigger warnings, and resources in the bottom of the episode's description box.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the same words over and over again. You know what I mean.
You know where it is. You can never look at it, but
you never look
there.
But it's there. So
it's under the transcript section of the podcast.
That's right. Yep. And we will link all of our resources there.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening.
Thank you, everybody.
We'll see you soon.
Bye.